Welcome to Speak a Dogcast. My name is David Farb, Animal Behavior Specialist, and I am broadcasting from WOUF Woof Studios in beautiful Palm City, Florida. Thank you so much for joining me here again today. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. You can follow me on Instagram at Speak a Dogcast, and be sure you join me there every single Tuesday for Training Tip Tuesday, where I give you guys a new dog training tip every single week. Yes, now if the visual thing's more your thing, subscribe to my YouTube channel at Speak a Dogcast. Go on over there, check it out. And if you would like to support the show even further, you can become a patron of the show today at patreon.com/speakadogcast. If you love the show, if you love what you're hearing, if you love the podcast, my Apple users, my Spotify users, scroll on down, give me that 5-star rating or leave me a review. I really, really appreciate it, guys. Now on today's show, how to walk your dog. Yes, it's time to go back to basics a little bit. The most important aspect of dog training, the most important, is the walk, guys. Be sure you're doing it right. Then we have a segment on reactive dogs. Is your dog reactive? Well, we'll talk about that to find out. Then comes the history of animal mascots 101, followed by the listener Q&A. If you have questions for the listener Q&A, dog training questions, animal training questions, any dog psychology, any questions at all, hey, just send them over. questions@speakadogcast.com. You can email me or just message me on social media. Now, before we get going with today's show, I have to give you that trivia question. And today's question is going to be, what is the name of an animal that eats meat and plants? Yes, what is the name, what is the term for an animal that eats both meat and plants? I will give you the answer to that question somewhere in today's podcast, so be sure you stick around. Sit, stay, and enjoy the show. Next on Speak a Dogcast, how to walk your dog. There it is, to the point. How to walk your dog, because there is, yes, there is a right and there is a wrong way to walk your dog. And majority of people out there, they do it the wrong way. And they probably don't get the results that they're looking to gain out of the walk because they're doing it incorrectly. Look, dog training, dog psychology, every aspect of dog training is very much science-based. So if you put in one, you're going to get two. Majority of the time, right? Like sometimes it's 0.8. It's not quite one. And we have to deal with that variable. But the point is, if you do a walk correctly, if you use the proper techniques, if you use the proper tools, you get the correct result. If you don't, you don't get the correct result. Look, when we walk our dogs, we're looking to get certain results. We're looking to get physical fulfillment. We're looking to get mental fulfillment for our dogs and ourselves. Right? Why not? But we're gearing the walk toward our dogs. That's what we're focusing on. We're trying to get their fulfillment. So we're trying to give them mental, physical fulfillment, sometimes maybe a little socialization, sometimes some training, some structure. That's what we're trying to do on the walk. And when you don't do the walk properly, you're not going to get these results. Guys, walks can fix behavioral problems. Yes, they can. Walks are the most basic foundational building block when it comes to my training. It doesn't matter what issue I'm dealing with. Like, it really doesn't, whether I just have a pulling dog or I have a dog who reacts at other dogs, or we have an aggressive dog, or we have jumping, or we have bolting out the door. All of these issues, every single one of them starts with a proper walk. It really is everything. And as I always say, if you're hiring a trainer and they're not starting with some basic psychology information and a walk and leash work, I would hire a different trainer. That's just me. Someone who isn't focusing on the core of what a dog is, which is the walk, migratory pack animals, if you're not focusing on what they are at their core, then you're never going to get to the core of the issue. So it all starts with a proper walk. Guys, proper walks are pretty simple in the sense of what they look like, right? Now, to get there, that could be a little more complicated, but depending on your dog. But what a proper walk looks like, it's very simplistic. You've probably seen it, not as often as I wish you did, but you've probably seen it. You have a dog walking next to their human, right? They're not ahead of them, they're not behind them, they're with them. They're trotting along, they kind of have their head down, maybe not down, but down, right? They're not like up looking around, poking around everywhere, perked up. No, they're just head kind of relaxed position, trotting along, tails maybe up, but it's not wagging obsessively, it's not down scared, it's just kind of neutral, going with the walk. That is a proper walk. That's a dog in the zone with their owner, not worrying about the rest of the world, that they're in the zone on the walk. And that's what a proper walk should look like. It shouldn't be 6 feet out in front of you. It shouldn't be constantly going everywhere. We're going left. Now we're going right. Now we're going behind him. Now I'm going to pull. Now I'm going to jump. Now I'm going to bark at that dog. That is not a walk. That is what we call a free-for-all. Free-for-alls are not walks, guys. There's no focus. There's no mental zoning in. There's nothing of substance in those walks. So in order to create a proper walk, in order to understand how to walk your dog, you have to know what it looks like. And so simply put, that's the end result. Your dog is walking with you. Not ahead of you, not behind you, not distracted, not hyper, not losing it, not barking, not growling. They're just with you. It's not to say your dog can't take in the world around them. It's not to say they're not going to perk up and see something over there and go, oh, hey, what's that? But they're not necessarily going to react to it. There's nothing wrong with your dog taking the world in as they walk. Just kind of a little side note. I don't need them to be a robot and just zoned in. That's not quite what I'm saying. But what I am saying is they have to be present with you on the walk. Most dogs are on their own walk and they're dragging their human around. You know what I mean? That's not present with you. That's not a walk together. That's not a pack walk. So that's where it begins. Knowing what that walk looks like. How do we get there? Here we go. 6 foot nylon leash, martingale collar. I've said it over and over and over. I'm going to say it again. All right. This is the best tool out there to walk your dog, guys. It really is, because we need to be able to give directions to our dogs and corrections to our dog that they understand and that, quite frankly, just work. So 6 foot nylon leash, no problem with a leather leash, and a martingale collar. 2/3 nylon, 1/3 chain. Best collars on the planet. Get you one. All right. So, once we do have our proper tools, one more tool, treats and treat pouch. Got to have a treats and treat pouch. Don't forget that. Leash, collar, treats and treat pouch. Poop bags, sure, you need poop bags. Let's clean up after our dogs, guys. But as far as from a training perspective, those are really the only tools you need. You know, I see people that bring the clickers. They have like a training belt, right? They've got the clickers and the water bowl and the water. And sure, if it's hot, guys, bring water. But you know what I mean? It's getting a little much with how people think they need all these tools to walk their dog. And it's very simple. KISS, keep it simple, stupid. Leash, collar, treats, treat pouch. That's it. It's all I need to train my dog on a walk. All right. So a good walk begins at home. You heard me correctly. A good walk begins at home. If your dog is already in a hyper, overexcited state of mind, it is not the time to walk our dogs, guys. Okay. If your dog is jumping and getting nuts and going crazy, that is not the state of mind we want to start our walk in. Walks are meant to be fun, right? Like, I don't mind a little bit of, oh, cool, we're going for a walk, a little whack. But when they're jumping, whining, leaping, bolting all over the place, running in circles, maybe, you know, that type of stuff is telling us our dog is not ready to go for a walk. And it's our job to calm them down and make them relax, whether that's just redirecting through a sit, a stay, go to your spot command, or just waiting them out. Oftentimes, I will grab the leash. They get a little excited. I'll put the leash back down and walk away. Desensitize them a little bit to the routine of the walk, if you will. Okay, that's where it's going to begin. If you can get your dog in a calm state of mind before you go out on the walk, guys, I can almost guarantee you, you're going to have a night and day difference with your walk of what it was before to what it is if you wait for them to be calm. I'm telling you, it's a lot. So if you wait for them to be calm, it's everything. Wait for them to be calm, leash them up. Now we're going to open the door. And I'm going to wait again. This is a process, guys. And like, what did I say at the very beginning? To get your dog to walk properly, it takes time and training. And most people don't want to put in either of those two words and they don't get the results. So you have to take your time. This is going to take time. I'm just warning you now. David, I don't have 20 minutes. Then don't get a dog. Okay. If you don't have 20 minutes for your dog to spend before going out to get them on a proper walk, so you don't have to spend that 20 minutes in a few months, don't get a dog, ladies and gentlemen. Don't get a dog if you don't want to put in the time. It's that simple. I mean this in the nicest way possible. I don't give a crap. Don't give a crap what your lifestyle is. I do not care. You can go be selfish and do whatever. I don't care. I really don't care. If you want to be gone 12 hours a day, to each his own, guys. Don't get a dog then. There it is. You know what I mean? Like, I don't give a crap how you live your life, but do not do that to a dog. Well, my dog won't behave. I'm gone 10 hours a day. Yeah, I take him for a walk. I let him sniff and pee on everything. Why isn't he behaving? Okay. Anyway, so I'm sorry, guys, but it's the truth. These are creatures. These are living things that have needs and fulfillments that need to be met. If you don't meet them, you're going to get a frustrated creature. Weird how that works. Anyway, so 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it takes, we're going to wait for them to calm down. I'm going to open the front door once I have them leashed up. And if they're not calm, I'm shutting the door and we're waiting again. They calm down, I open the door. They stay calm, we walk outside. If they start pulling, I turn around and go back inside, shut the door, wait for them to calm down. They calm down, I open the door. I try to walk outside, they try to pull, we turn. Rinse and repeat. Guys, I'll be honest, dog training is not an overly complicated thing. The science behind it gets a little tricky, but it's very basic. You have to ask yourself, is the dog doing what I want? And if the answer is a simple no, and in the context of walks, pulling is the simple no, if they're pulling, I cannot keep moving forward. Because if I keep moving forward and keep letting them pull, I keep reinforcing that behavior and they keep thinking they're supposed to keep pulling and they keep doing it. Do you see the issue? So it's very simple. If my dog starts pulling on the walk, I'm going to turn around and go the other way until they relax. Once they relax, we turn around, we try to go the other direction again. If they don't relax, we turn around. This is what a walk is. I utilize turns, redirections, leash work, corrections to be able to show them if you pull, you don't get what you want. We don't keep going the direction you want if you pull. And if they start pulling, they turn around and they start pulling again, guess what? I turn around again until they start realizing, dude, every time I go out in front of this guy, he redirects me and he gives me a correction. But every time I back off and stay with him, oh, all of a sudden, I'm not getting corrected anymore. Oh, time for a treat. Good boy. Time for a treat. Good boy. See what I'm saying? It's not overly complicated stuff, but you have to make your dog understand, I don't want you pulling in front of me. And if you do pull in front of me, I redirect it. If you stay with me, you get a reward. Now, let's talk about these treats and walks for a second, because I've been seeing a lot of videos online. And it's a technique. I've seen trainers do it. I don't agree with it. I think there are much better ways to do it. I think you're actually creating an uphill battle for yourself if you do it this way. And what I'm talking about, you've probably seen it, where people take a treat and they just hold it next to their side, right? Like they stand up, they're walking with the dog, they have a treat and they're just holding it to their side and getting the dog's nose to stay with the treat. They're not creating any focus on them. They're creating intent focus on the treat. Now look, there is a term for this. We call it reinforcement sampling. I don't have a problem with a little bit of reinforcement sampling. For example, let's say I have a brand new client. Let's say I have a dog on the walk. And let's say this dog is reactive toward other dogs. That dog doesn't know I want them to stop reacting yet. We have to show them that. And sometimes offering a treat or reward going, hey, here's a sample of the reward you get if you ignore that dog. So the dog's over to my right. I'm offering a treat toward my left, right? I want to change his focus to the other direction. So I just wave a treat in front of his face and get him to take it. Now he's going to go right back to the reacting toward that dog, because that's his MO, that's the pattern, that's what they're going to do. And then what does the trainer do? They take the treat, same thing, and they just hold it there. They don't say anything, they don't try to redirect it. They let the treat do the talking. That is reinforcement sampling. The problem is if you continue to rely on that and you don't ever shape that behavior away from it, you're reinforcing the wrong thing. Okay, reinforcement sampling turns into reinforcement, and now you're reinforcing a behavior you don't really want. In my opinion, I don't want dogs focusing on my hands, on the treat pouch, and not me. And the problem is when you just hold treats at your side to get your dog to walk with you, quote, walk with you, you know, if you just hold treats at your side, all you're doing is creating, one, a dependency on those treats, two, focus on the treats, the hand, and the treat pouch, and three, you're not really solving the issue of getting the dog to give up. You're just sort of distracting them. You're not actually creating a moment where they could look at the thing, teach them to look away, and reward it. Instead, we're distracting them away. That's not as powerful, guys. That's not as powerful as redirecting and controlling. You're not actually controlling focus. You're manipulating it, but you're not controlling it. Does that make sense? Right? So we've talked about this before, and this is, I know, kind of a big side note, but I really wanted to touch on this today because I'm seeing this on Instagram everywhere, where people are showing these videos where they give a dog a treat at their side and the dog magically stops reacting through like 50 cuts. They don't show, you know, cuts in the videos. They don't really show you the full process. And I'm going, because they're not showing you the struggle they're having. They don't want to. It will work long term. Eventually, sometimes it, and that's the other thing, a lot of times it won't work. It'll end up, okay, we don't need to go down that road. But the point remains, guys, you're not redirecting and creating focus. You're not. You are. Again, you're creating focus on the treat. You're not actually shaping a behavior. You're sort of bribing a behavior. And that's the issue. You can't bribe behaviors, guys, because eventually that bribe is not going to be enough. And the dog's going to go, eh, I'm sick of this bribe. Let me go back to reacting. Because you're not changing the pattern. You're just bribing. And there is a huge difference. Huge difference. Okay? So this goes back to my kissy noise exercise, doesn't it? How many times have I talked about it? We kissy noise. This starts at home. This is not on the walk. This begins. We do this at home to begin with. Kissy noise, redirect, call their name, Fluffy, and I love it. Coco's below my feet. She woke up and immediately looks up at me, my little chihuahua, because I made the kissy noise. That's how powerful the kissy noise can be. Kissy noise, treat below the chin, lock eye contact, reward. Kissy noise, call their name, Fluffy, lock eye contact, good boy, reward. This is a powerful tool because when we're on the walk and my dog does get distracted, look, whether it's reactivity or your dog's just distracted on the walk, kissy noise and a turn can do wonders to redirect their focus, because not only are we redirecting their focus away from whatever they're reacting on, we are redirecting their focus back up at you. That's the power of the kissy noise. Guys, I don't want my dogs to just not react. I want them to go, hey, what should I do here? Hey, Dad, I didn't react. Should I go? I want them to look for direction. Why do people not want their dogs looking for direction? I see it all the time where they bribe them with the treats on the walk and then the dog gives two. Great, your dog's not reacting, but they give two craps about you. You can't regain their focus. You can't get them to look at you. The walk is not about the pack. It's about whatever they want still, even though they're not reacting. In my book, that's a problem. You're not getting what you could out of that walk because you're not creating focus. So again, it starts at home. And what are we doing at home before we walk out the door on the proper walk? We're creating focus. We're creating relaxation. Then we walk out the front door. So that way it can carry over. So now we started at home. We have relaxation. We have focus. We walk out the front door. Oh, there's a trigger for my dog. There's where something they might react to. Kissy noise, redirection. Oh, hey, what are we doing? Reward. And all of a sudden my dog doesn't care about that reactive dog anymore. And not only that, they're looking up at me going, hey, we go, keep going. Don't react. Cool. Okay. They're looking actively for that direction. But if you don't create that, guys, your walks will never succeed. I'm just being honest. If you're just bribing your dogs and you're just waving treats around in front of their nose to distract them, you're not changing behavior. You're not changing patterns and you're not creating a proper walk. So it's become such a pet peeve of mine because walks are done so poorly. I mean, it's probably, it kills me to even say it. I think 10% of the time when I'm in public, do I see a dog walking properly anymore? 10% of the time? That's so sad, guys. That's so beyond sad that nobody properly walks their dog anymore. Ugh, kills me. Seriously, though, guys, it's pretty simplistic. When we start a walk, it starts at home. We have to create calmness. Calmness? Create calmness? I don't know if that sounds right. Whatever. But you have to get your dog in a calm state of mind before we go for a walk. A walk is already going to be exciting. We don't need to pump them up and make this overexciting thing. So we start with calm behavior, and we slowly work our way to getting out the door and making sure our dog is calm. Once we get out the door, we have our leash, our collar, our treat pouch, and treats. Martingale collar, 6-foot nylon leash, or leather leash. Okay? If I feel like my dog is starting to pull, what do? We redirect, turn around, go back inside, wait for them to relax. Try it again, rinse and repeat until we can get out on the walk. If our dog starts to pull, we're going to turn and go the other way. Maybe make a little correction on the collar, turn and go the opposite direction. If they start to pull again, same thing. We can also be utilizing our kissy noise in this moment to try to get their focus back on us and back on the walk, utilizing turns and changes in direction to keep them with us. Guys, don't be afraid to utilize these collars, to utilize this leash. The whole point of these collars is to, what, use them. Don't be afraid to make a correction with these collars. But how, with that said, corrections are small. Corrections are in and out. Corrections don't need to be giant yanks. You don't have to be yanking on your dog. That's one thing I love about these collars. Use a little technique. Use a little finesse. The collar, it's awesome. The martingale collar, when you make a correction, it's going to make one noise. Zip. In and out if you do it correctly, right? It's not going to tighten and release. And of course, my martingale collar is not sitting here where it normally is. I would show you. I wasn't prepared. That's all right. So it's going to make one noise, zip, in and out when we tighten and release it. We're going to tighten and release the collar so fast that it only makes one noise. That's how you make a proper correction. It's really in the wrist. We're not yanking using our arms, none of that stuff. Very minimal corrections. We always aim to keep that leash nice and loose with a U-shape in it. If your dog starts to pull, what did we just say a minute ago? Turn redirection. Kissy noise, redirect their focus. If they go to pull again, same thing. Rinse and repeat until you get your dog walking with you. Once they're walking by your side, nice and calm, loose leash, feel free to say, good boy, as you're walking, and reward with a treat as you continue to walk, as opposed to bribing them, as opposed to guiding their nose around. Utilize these collars. Guys, this is why people bribe, because they don't understand how to use a correction, and it's making me nuts. It makes all trainers and professionals out there nuts. Don't be afraid to correct your dogs. Don't be afraid to reward your dogs. It's all about creating that balance between the two. So utilize that leash, create focus, turn and redirect when you lose your dog's focus. That is how we properly walk our dogs and get them next to us, okay? Stop bribing them. Reward them. Huge difference. If you don't understand the difference between a bribe and a reward, guys, listen to all my great episodes on dog psychology, training, corrections. There's amazing content, all kinds of amazing content. So go back, go peruse through all the episodes, and make sure you understand the difference between a reward and a bribe, right? All right, guys. So don't forget, 6-foot nylon leash, martingale collar, treats, treat pouch. Keep it simple. Take your time. Work on controlling your dog's focus and redirecting it when you don't like what you see. It really is that simple at the end of the day to get your dog to walk, but it takes time, it takes effort, it takes training, it takes work. So get out there, work your dog, and of course, get out there and walk your dog. Are you tired of your dog barking all the time? Or maybe you want them to stop jumping on people when they come over. Or does your dog take you for a walk instead of the other way around? Well, we can help. At The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, we are committed to improving the relationships and lives people have with their pets. No matter what behavioral issue you are experiencing, from an unruly puppy to more severe issues, we can help. Our virtual training programs are catered to you and your pet and create a training plan that gets results. For more information, you can check out our website at www.thenatureoftraining.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram at Speak a Dogcast. With the ability to connect, teach, and train with pet owners around the world, together we can make a better home for our furry friends. The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, helping you achieve success with your pet. Reactive dogs. It is a term that is getting thrown around like it's free candy. Yes, reactive dogs. You'll see it online. You'll see it on Instagram. My dog is reactive. My dog has reactivity issues that we've been working on for years. What does that mean? What does that mean, guys? What does reactive dog, what does that mean? Well, David, my dog reacts. Yes, but what does that mean? My dog reacts when I pull out a treat bag. Does that mean he's aggressive? Wait, no, it doesn't. It just means he reacts. It's a reaction. Ah. Do you see the problem already? When we say the term reactive dogs, I'm seeing it on Instagram left and right, this term being thrown around. First of all, we came up with terms a lot, came up with terms for psychology and understanding this stuff a long time ago. And for some reason in 2024, we all think we need to be the best, newest, greatest thing. And we have to reinvent the wheel every time for marketing. And so reactive dogs is the new one, right? Force-free training was a couple years ago. I noticed I don't see as much force-free training anymore. Fascinating. Wonder why. Probably because it doesn't work, because there's no such thing. All right. So let's talk about reactive dogs, the new hot button word, reactive dogs. It doesn't mean a damn thing, because it means everything. That's what drives me nuts about this term, guys. I just proved it. I put a bowl of food down, my dog reacts to it. My dog sees their best dog friend, they're going to react to it. When I get home, my dog reacts to me. I had a dog in training the other day, and he reacted to a dog. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. Like, do you see the issue? It is a generalized term that doesn't mean anything. Did your dog react happily, aggressively, sad, cowardly? Like, how did they react? There's the problem, guys. Reactive dogs is a terrible term because it doesn't tell you what's actually happening. And in fact, it's a dangerous term. What happens when I bring my dog to the vet and go, hey, my dog reacts to other dogs? And they're going to look at you and go, what do you mean reacts? Like aggressive, happy? Oh, no, he's just happy. He gets very happy around other dogs. And the vet's going to look at you and go, what the hell is, why would you say that? You see what I'm saying here, guys? There's not reactive, and it's not a reactive dog. It's no, your dog has aggression tendencies. Whoa, David, wait a second. You just used the big A word. Yes, I did, because that's what it is. Guys, when we sugarcoat, we wonder why we can't get our dogs over these issues they have. Do you know why? Because you're sugarcoating it. You're throwing pixie dust, fairy tale BS on top of it. Why? Because for some reason, our society doesn't want to grow up anymore and realize, holy crap, my dog's being aggressive. I need to deal with this. It's, oh, my dog's reactive. My dog is reactive. He has reactivity issues. We're working through it. It's been 7 years. He has reactivity issues. Maybe you're not doing something right then. You know what I mean? I've seen that on Instagram where people go, oh, we've been dealing with this for 4 years. It's gotten a little better. Maybe you're doing something wrong. Guys, by approaching your dog's aggressive tendencies as reactivity issues, that's a problem. That is a problem. You're not looking at it for what it is. You're not looking at your problem and going, holy crap, my dog's going to bite somebody. We need to do something about this. Instead, we're going, well, he's a little sensitive. He has reactivity issues. No, guys, he's not sensitive. He's a dog. Okay, he doesn't have the feelings that you and I do. So when we talk about this reactivity stuff, oh, it drives me nuts. It drives me insane because you're not calling it what it is. You're doing the dog a disservice. And for that matter, I think you cannot manage or fix these behaviors if you come into it with that mindset because you're not looking at it for what it is. And if you don't look at it for what it is, how can you solve it? How? It drives me even more nuts when I see professionals using these terms like reactivity issues. And I'm a positive reinforcement trainer. Y'all know that. You've heard my feelings on that, Chris. Not even feelings. It's the reality that there is no such thing as positive reinforcement training. This isn't a feeling. This isn't even, I could even say it's not an opinion because it's science, guys. This isn't my opinion. I didn't make this crap up. So crap. No, it's good stuff. So we talk about this reactivity stuff. It's making me crazy because you're not looking at it and going, no, my dog has aggressive tendencies. That's what's really happening here. Because if you looked at it like that, you'd probably be able to manage their behaviors a lot better. Oh, man. I don't understand. It's 2024 and we all have to just be soft about everything. Guys, dogs are not soft. They're dogs. They are domesticated wolves. They are amazing, badass animals. And if you can't handle their badassery, don't get one. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know why I have to spell this out. If you cannot handle the responsibility of a German Shepherd, yes, responsibility. As my parents used to say, the big R word. If you cannot handle the responsibility of a Doberman, of a German Shepherd, hell, of a yellow lab who needs to be exercised like you wouldn't believe. If you cannot handle those responsibilities that come with these amazing animals, don't get one. Stop putting the label on it that, well, he's reactive. Don't go adopt a dog that has reactivity issues if you're not going to put yourself in a mindset ready to solve it, ready to manage it. Look, guys, I'm the first to say you can't solve every behavior. You can't, but you can manage them better. I know 100% fact. And these people out there that go, well, my dog's had these reactive, he's been reactive for 4 years, and they're putting posts up on Instagram every day. Those people don't want their dog's problems solved. David, that's harsh and mean. No, David, that's the truth. That's the truth, guys. It's really, it's a sad thing. It's really unbelievably sad when you see people like that. But those people need to be needed. And they want to be needed by their pet instead of fixing their pet's problems. Do you know how I know this? Because I see it too often. And I'm not going to get into specifics because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings locally. But I deal with this a lot in my area, and age has something to do with it. Again, we're not going to get into specifics, but where certain people will not let their emotions get out of the way. and instead they do their dog a disservice by not getting them past what they could be getting their dog past, because they need to be needed. It's sad. And I think a lot of times when we have reactive dogs, dogs with aggressive tendencies or anxiety issues, again, that same thing, guys. Dog with thunder and lightning. Someone will go, my dog is reactive toward thunder and lightning. Well, what do you mean react? Like, he reacts at it, or he barks at the thunder? Like, a lot of people don't want their dogs to get over their issues. A lot of people do. Don't get me wrong. Those people are out there, and you guys are awesome. Keep kicking butt. Keep working at it. You know what I mean? I love it. It's all I ever ask for my clients. Try. Put in the effort. Some people don't on purpose because they want their dog to need them. Guys, your dog's always going to need you. That's what makes dogs amazing. So make them more amazing. Get them over their anxiety. Help your dog be better instead of, quote, reactive. Food for thought today, guys. Food for thought. Let's start looking at dogs. When you go on Instagram later, when you're out in public, I want you to look at a dog and go, oh, he has aggressive tendencies. Oh, he's a little possessive over that toy. Instead of, oh, he's reactive. Let's stop doing our dogs a disservice by sugarcoating what's actually happening and actually recognizing these behaviors for what they are. That way we can change them, manage them, do something about them. I don't know about you guys. I don't want my dogs to be anxious. I don't want my dogs to have aggressive tendencies. I don't want my dogs to need me in that way. Instead, I want my dogs to look at me as a source of leadership, as a source of comfort, as a source of fun, as a source of their pack. A source of strength within their pack. Isn't that what you want for your dog? So I implore you guys, if your dogs have issues and you feel like you're just not getting past them, you might be getting your own way. You might be getting in your own way, and it might be time to call a professional. Food for thought, something to think about. But remember, guys, reactive dogs? No. We're not using that generalized term anymore. We're going to call it what it is. Look at behavioral issues, call them out for what they are, and stop saying reactive dogs. The answer to today's trivia question, what is the name for an animal that eats both meat and plants? It's an omnivore. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the history of Animal Mascots 101. Today, we'll be talking about the University of Buffalo. Known as the State University of New York at Buffalo, or more commonly referred to as University of Buffalo, it was founded in 1846 as a private medical college. The school merged with the State University of New York system in 1962. They have campuses located in both Buffalo and Amherst, New York. Now, you can probably guess what their mascot is. They are the Buffalo Bulls. I know, right? I thought maybe you were going to say Buffalo Buffaloes is probably what you're thinking, because that would be hilarious to be the Buffalo Buffaloes. But no, they are the Bulls. Yes, and their bull's name is Victor E. Bull. We've seen this kind of a few times now, recurring theme among the college mascots. Victor E. Bull. Victor E. Bull. He is an anthropomorphic blue bull. Yes, he makes appearances at all of the home football and basketball games. Now, the original unofficial mascot for the Bulls was a 175-pound bison head, like a stuffed head, named Bosco. It was given to students at the very first homecoming football game in 1934, given by two alumni. Now, the location of the bison head is, well, now unknown. I would guess, if I was a betting man, I would say that the bison head is probably sitting in one of the fraternity houses at the University of Buffalo in one of their secret rooms. That would be my guess. Yeah. But then in 1957, producer Mike Todd and actress Elizabeth Taylor, yes, gave the Buffalo cheerleaders a 7-month-old black Angus Irish Dexter bull named Buster. Now, Dexters are a miniature cattle that originated in Ireland, and so naturally they thought that a miniature bull would be better than a full-sized one. However, as Buster got older, his temper increased, and he had to be replaced by Buster II, followed by a full line of successors until 1970, when the football program took a seven-year hiatus. Now, in 1997, as part of the Buffalo's football team's return to Division I sports, the athletic department held a naming contest to name the new mascot. Victor E. Bull. Yes, he was the winner and was submitted by undergraduate Rusty Hill, and soon after, the Blue Bull mascot was born. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the listener Q&A. The first question today comes from Judy from Saratoga Springs, New York. Judy says, I have an Airedale Terrier and he is becoming a big boy. I'm having a little difficulty walking him, especially around distractions. He tends to pull and he is strong enough that he can kind of, well, bully me around. I've listened to a few of your episodes and I know you say to not use a harness, but I really don't like the idea of using any kind of harsh collar. Are there any tips you could offer to get him under better control on a harness? Judy, thank you for the question. This is going to be 100% blunt, honest answer. No, I cannot offer you any tips to get him under better control in a harness because the harness is the wrong tool. You're using the wrong training tool and you're asking me to give you advice on something you straight up know I don't want you using. This is kind of like, I don't even know, Judy, I'm trying to be nice here, but I don't know what to say to you. You've listened to my episodes. You know I don't want you using a harness, but you're asking me to give you advice on using a harness. It's like asking a carpenter to, here's a screwdriver. Can you nail in that nail for me, please? It's not going to work. You're putting a square peg in a circle hole. It doesn't work. Judy, you got a big dog here. You have a responsibility as a big dog owner to get your dog under control. And I'm sorry, the harness is not going to work. You're using the wrong tools and it's not okay. Judy, you need to be using bare minimum a martingale collar. I'm not asking you to put a prong collar on your dog. It's not what I'm immediately saying. So when you talk about harsh collar, Judy, you're letting your heart get in the way. I'm a 15-year professional telling you a martingale collar is a very humane, correct collar to use. And you're asking me to ignore all my knowledge and training because your heart wants to get in the way. I'm sorry, Judy. I'm not going to do it. Look, again, 100% honesty time. When I walk into a home with a client and they say, well, I don't want to use anything else but a harness, I'll say, have a nice day. Call somebody else. Good luck to you. I will not work with a client who uses a harness on their dog, with the exception, because there's an exception to pretty much every rule, with the exception that that specific dog cannot wear a collar for a medical reason. That is the only reason. That is literally the only reason I will use a harness to train a dog. And even in those instances, my God, is it a pain in the neck to train the dog because a harness is not the right tool. We don't have an option because the dog has a physical limitation, but it doesn't work even then. Do you understand what I'm saying, Judy? This is not the right tool for your dog. You have an Airedale. It's a big dog. You need to get a proper collar on him. And until you do, you're going to continue to have issues. I'm sorry. Feel free to reach out if you'd like more help with training, but I'm telling you right now, if you don't want to take the advice and put it into play, you're not going to get the results you're looking for. So I wish you the best of luck, Judy. I really do. But until you get that harness off your dog, you're going to keep on struggling. Next question. This comes from Erica from Boston, Massachusetts. Erica says, I have been listening to your podcast for a little while now, and I love all the great training tips. I have found it very helpful. Thank you, Erica. But I noticed you do not ever endorse a specific dog food brand or tell us what you feed your dogs. Any specific advice on dog food brands? Erica, great question. Thank you for the question. Glad you like the podcast. I love the question, actually, because you're right. You're 100% right. I never do endorse one brand. I never tell you guys what I feed my dogs. And there's quite a few reasons. Number one, I'm not getting paid. No dog food brand is giving me money. No, I'm kidding. Look, for me to endorse anything like that, if a company were to ever approach me, it's got to be something I want to endorse. It's got to be something I believe is a good quality product, right? Whoops, I'm knocking my desk like twice here. Or I wouldn't endorse it. So first and foremost, I am not a nutritionist. I am not a nutrition expert, and I never for a second pretend to be. And I can't tell you how many dog trainers out there pretend they're nutrition experts and tell you what you should or shouldn't be feeding your dog. And I think they're full of it, if you want my honest opinion. So when it comes to dog food, I'm going to rely more on my veterinarian's advice, right? And even a veterinarian, even my veterinarian, most veterinarians are going to flat out admit to you, they are not nutritionists. They are not nutrition specialists. They don't have the time to dedicate, you know, all the research and reading it takes to be a nutrition specialist. So with that said, veterinarians, most veterinarians in the United States are going to recommend one, at least one of three dog food brands. And you'll see it across the board, all over the country. It's either going to be Royal Canin, Science Diet, or Purina Pro Plan. Those are the three. Why? Because they are the three most researched dog food brands in the entire country. They're researched by non-biased third-party companies, and there is a ton of research done on them. AKA less reading for the veterinarian, less research for the veterinarians. They have companies that can do the same thing when it comes to medications and vaccines, guys. It is impossible for any doctor, any veterinarian to keep up with everything. It is absolutely impossible. And that's why we have these third-party companies that do this independent research. I know, I'm getting like the long run around here, Erica. I'm kind of running you around because the truth is I'm not going to give you a brand I endorse. I'm just not going to do it. There are a lot of high-quality dog food brands out there. There is a lot of crap dog food brands out there. You know, I will say, it is, there is to some degree the old adage of you get what you pay for. Yes, to a certain dollar sign. Once you get to a certain level in dog food, I think you're kind of paying for the brand name at that point. You're paying for Nike. You know what I mean? But there is a difference between very cheap dog food and a better, higher quality dog food. So I would just recommend finding somewhere in the middle. Let's not break the bank, though. I don't want people going into debt over feeding their dogs. You don't need to get crazy with this, guys. Look, I will say this. My parents had a Shih Tzu who lived to be, I think, 18 years old, and they fed her Pedigree wet and dry dog food her entire life. I'm not endorsing it. I'm not saying it's what you should do or shouldn't do. I am simply stating a fact that that dog lived to be 18 years old, and my mom gave that dog too many treats too. Love you, mom, but come on, you know you did. And she still lived to be 18, even on something, you know, Pedigree dog food, not, you know, not even this boutique-y stuff. So take that with what you will, you know, take from that what you will. Erica, like I said, unfortunately, I'm not going to endorse a specific brand today until they start paying me. So, but I hope that helps you out. But my recommendation, of course, is to talk to your veterinarian, because there's the other, one other quick thing. Certain breeds have certain dietary requirements. So I can't give this blanket term of, hey, go for this one dog food, because your specific breed at home might need something a little different. That's just one of those things where I can't, again, not a nutritionist. So I wish you the best of luck on finding that proper dog food, Erica. Hey, if you have any training questions, I'll answer them. So feel free to send me those questions. Guys, keep sending me questions. Questions@speakadogcast.com. Message me on social media. Your question could get featured on the show. But keep the questions coming. I'm loving it. And thank you, Erica, for the question today. That'll wrap up the podcast today. Thank you so much for listening in. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. You can follow me on Instagram at @speakadogcast. Join me there every Tuesday for Training Tip Tuesday, brand new dog training tip coming at you. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/speakadogcast. Become a patron of the show today, patreon.com/speakadogcast. If you love what you're hearing, if you love the podcast, do me a favor, scroll on down, give me that 5-star rating, give me the thumbs up on the YouTube channel. Yes, I want to thank my patrons, my pup supporter, Regula Wright, and my dog friend, Maureen Crossan. Have a wonderful week, and don't forget, get out there and walk your dog.